Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 34 of the Historic Performance Podcast. I'm your host, James Darley. For all you first-time listeners, thanks for tuning in. The Historic Performance Podcast is published every Tuesday and Thursday, and all show notes can be found via my website, www.historicperformance.net. The best way to keep up to date with the podcast is to either follow me via Twitter, at Historic Perform, or via my Facebook page, which is called Historic Performance. Before getting to today's guest, I want to thank Paul Bauer from Barnsley Football Club for the introduction. In today's episode, I'm chatting with David Tivy. David is a physical performance coach with the English Football Association. He's a full-time consultant there, and he works with the England U17s. Beyond that, he also has a role as a sports science logistics coordinator, where he works with all of England's development squads from U15 all the way up to U20. In this episode, David talks about the challenges of being a physical performance coach involved in international football, England DNA, and he describes a typical U17 camp. It's a pretty good insight into international football, something I haven't really covered in my podcast extensively. I hope you enjoy it. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. I'm really happy to be joined by David Tivy. He's a physical performance coach with the English Football Association and also a logistics coordinator for their men's development squads. I'm really happy to have him on the podcast. It's been a long time in the making, a lot of back and forth. But David, finally welcome, and how are you?
I'm good, thanks, James. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Someone wanting to interview me on your podcast. Thanks.
David, the way I usually like to begin most of the podcast is if the guest can just give a little bit of brief history about themselves and how they ended up at their current role.
Okay, so growing up in Liverpool is as a young child playing football in the streets. It's a big football city. I've always loved football. Played amateur level, wasn't good enough to make it to the professional stage. So I went to university in Liverpool John Moores, which is renowned for producing practitioners in our profession. I studied the science of football at the university, which is a sports science related degree with the application to football. Really, really good course, and I'd recommend it for people who want to get involved in sports science, strength and conditioning, performance analysis, especially within football. While I was here, the university had great links with the Northwest clubs. So while I was studying second year at the university, I got a chance to intern at Everton FC's academy. So this was the first time I got to step into the football environment and apply the skills you learn, the curriculum you learn on your sports science degree. From this, I completed my degree whilst still working there three times a week, maybe, in the academy, working with John McKeown, who's head of sports science for the academy. From this, I got a chance to stay on there as lead intern, going into my, finishing university, which meant it was coordinating the internship program alongside Everton and alongside the university, the new recruiting and training them up on the academy side, whilst working with the first team and the under-21s development squad, assisting Dave Billows and Steve Tashian. So this was really a good insight, really, and it was it was my first kind of role in football, learning the environment, learning the culture, and especially applying them sports science skills. From here, I then started working as an itinerant member of staff part-time for the FA, which entitled me just going away when needed. So I covered, first camp I ever covered was under 16s youth development squad with England. And then I've worked all the way up until under 18s and even under 19s as like a part-time member of staff. I was doing this while I was finishing up at my internship, the lead internship at Everton. But then one summer I got a phone call from a League Two club, Bury Football Club, asking me if I would like to come in for an interview. I got recommended by Phil Neville while I was at Everton to go in as their first team fitness coach. So I went for the interview and I thought I'd have a stab at first team football in League Two. So I'd done that for 1 year. Didn't really work out. It was a good role. It was a good grounding role for me to go from a really high performance environment at Everton Football Club to a club which was a year before me joining was going through administration. So it was really good for me to go in there and have a go. And I'll be honest, I made a lot of mistakes, but I was doing numerous amounts of jobs. I was working as a fitness coach. I was doing the end stage rehab with the injured players, with the physiotherapist. I was doing all the nutrition whilst travelling up and down the country. So it was really good, really, really good experience for me. Didn't work out. I left after the year. And then I got a chance to come in full-time at the FA as a consultant, basically physical preparation coach for the men's under-17s, whilst sports science, physical performance, logistics, coordinating for all the other youth development squads. And that's where I am today.
Yeah, that's actually pretty funny, but that's not a bad not a bad person to recommend you to a club, Phil Neville. So congrats on that, dude.
No, I know. I was shocked myself, to be fair, but he recommended me for the job, and you know, I went and met the manager, and cracked on from there. Currently, I had about 5, 6, or 7 signed players while I was at Bury in the pre-season with a lot of trialists. I remember putting on a session for about 30 people, so it was it was challenging to say the least.
So your role right now is a physical performance or physical preparation coach at the English Football Association. What does that role entail? And then after that, we can talk a little bit about what you do as a sports science logistic coordinator.
So as a sports science performance coordinator, I oversee all the men's youth development squads from the ages under 15 to under 20. As all the squads meet up generally at the same time in international breaks within the football calendar in England, we have itinerant staff that cover the teams who generally come from clubs. So basically when they're not on camp with the international teams, they're back at the club and the club releases them to then join up with the squad. So I'm here to help them arrange logistics for the camps they cover. This generally consists of prepping everything they need from GPS equipment, ordering nutrition products, designing the menus for on camp, or making sure everything they have in place on is ready for them to start on the camp. If I move on to the other role, which is on the road with men's under 17, basically this is just a physical performance coach role. So this role covers all performance-related work. This can be from pitch-based warm-ups, pitch-based work, conditioning work, gym-based conditioning work, and recovery.
David, the reason I invited you on the show is because I haven't had a lot of guests that work in international football. So in international football, as you mentioned, you have your international breaks where the teams are going out and playing individual tournaments. So can you take us through an overview of what a camp looks like starting off you know, what planning is done pre-event or pre-camp?
So in terms of pre-camp, we plan as a multidisciplinary team to decide all the logistics of the event. In this meeting, this includes all the coaching staff. So that would be head coach, assistant coach, goalkeeping coach, and all the medical staff. So within the medical staff, it would be the doctor, the physio, and then any other coordinating staff would be in there as well. And basically, we'll get together, and this meeting will consist of deciding on when the team is travelling, when we're eating, what time are we training, when we have recovery days. So just all the logistics really come into that meeting, which is then put onto a planning document, which then we all follow when we get on camp. Apart from this meeting, there's also a technical tactical meeting, which I'm involved with as well. And this just consists of obviously myself and the head coach, assistant coach and goalkeeping coach. So that we come up with, they come up with the tactical plan. But we periodise that regarding the lead into the tournament. So I'm involved with that in deciding durations and intensities. Following these two meetings, the squad will be announced around 2 weeks before each camp or event. Once I know the squad, I will then start to contact all the club counterparts and send them a pre-camp training and match exposure document. This document contains 8 days pre-camp load information. So certain things we ask are, within them 8 days, are training volume in minutes on each day, intensity as ratings of perceived exertion on each day. So this gives us a picture to see where the players are at. On this document, we also request the players' individual gym-based conditioning programs, and if the player requires any individual nutritional requirements. Not only do I contact the clubs, the performance staff at the clubs, the medical team will also contact each club, the medical staff at each club, just to basically get an overview of the medical history or the injury history the player has. Basically, then we'll then combine that information together to produce a report.
After this, you know, the squad has been announced, the squad assembles, you travel if you need be to that specific tournament. So now you're actually in camp. Depending on the length of the tournament, the camp could consist anywhere between a week, and if we're talking about World Cup, obviously, it's a longer term procedure. But at the U17 level, what does the daily process look like at a camp that maybe a tournament is only 5 to 7 days?
So generally, initially we'll meet up at St. George's Park. So on day one, we'll meet up, the staff will meet up first, and we'll basically sit down as a multidisciplinary team again and go through all the information we've collected from the clubs. This allows us to have a general plan around all the individual players during the event. Some players may come in and haven't played on the day of arrival. Some players may have not played at all. So these players need different plans in place to manage them. So, for example, if a player has played on arrival, we'll plan a recovery period for them and pull them out of the sessions in the first couple of days. Following this, basically, we then, if I go through the daily process and what we do on camp, every day we see the players every morning. They basically report to wellness, which is a medical room. We have a medical room set up where the players come before breakfast and they do a subjective questionnaire. And also complete objective fatigue measures with the physio. The players will answer the questions based on sleep duration, quality of sleep, muscle soreness and fatigue. And then they'll go and see the physio who will perform them such things like an adductor squeeze just to see where they are, where they're at every morning. Not only do we ask them questions and test for objective measure, but we like to see them to see how they're feeling as well. I think this gives us a more of an idea with the subjective questionnaire to see where they're at. So following this morning wellness, the players will eat breakfast, and then the doctor will speak with the head coach one-to-one based on any health issues or injury issues, which following that, we will then have a technical meeting which will combine the subjective information and the medical information into planning training with the head coach, assistant coach, and GK coach. So I'm involved in this. So the information collected is discussed and helps us plan training. If a certain player we feel has had a response from the following day's activities, for example, he's shown fatigue, we can pull him out of the session, or we can modify their session by either removing them from the most physical part of the session, or even going to the likes of manipulating what they do in a session. For example, if it's the most physical part of the session, can we use them as a floater, or can we put them on the outside as a bounce player? Within this meeting, also we also speak about the general durations of each drill, the sets of each drill, and then we then combine all that, and then that goes onto a session plan for us to follow in the session. So following planning training, we tend to train in the afternoons. So this gives us enough time to do all our planning in the morning. This also allows us a period of time where we can fit in individual physical preparation. This is a slot which is combined with player education. So there'll be a group doing their education with the education officer, and there'll be a group doing their gym-based programs which have been sent in from the club, in which we switch round. This period's like an hour and a half. Not only gym-based programs can be done here. If a player has been flagged in the morning, we can then give the medical team time to for them to give them treatments to get them right for the training session, or just work on them in general. Following this period, we then have lunch. And then we will train in the afternoon. So before training, we have a slot, 20-minute slot just before the training time, and where we have a pre-training routine planned with regards to pre-activation. And this will be based around the content of the session planned. Things like up-regulation for increased muscle stiffness and multi-units recruitment, load acceptance drills and stability for neuromuscular control, and facilitation for specific activation of muscle groups. So once we've done that, we will then go out onto the grass, and then they'll complete a football-specific warm-up, which this is really combined between myself and the technical staff. As you're aware, we have a limited time with players. Therefore, we use the time of the warm to maximise technical and tactical principles whilst also hitting a physical stimulus in which what they're going to go into in the main core of the session. As I mentioned before, a lot of detail goes into the planning and time. So I'll work with the staff during training on playing times, let them know where they're up to in certain sets. And we always stick to the plan, because we try and maximise the time we have on the grass with the players. That's why it's so important we plan in detail. So if I move on to after the session, we always complete a recovery session post-session, because our objective physically, if we're going into a busy tournament, is to keep players fresh as we can. So post-training, we exit, try and offload the players as much as we can in recovery. So we take the players off the grass, and then do a regen session inside. This could be a gym-based regen session where we do a 20 minutes on the bike, on the spinner, just to flush out any rubbish in the legs from the session. We could also have a stretch in the gym, foam roll, or we'll either take them into the pool and do deep water running. Or even on the heavy days that we do have with the players, we'll put them in the ice baths and complete cold water immersion.
So, David, as of now, we've talked about the plane that goes around the training sessions. But obviously, there's a lot of communication going on with the technical staff. So how do you go about playing for games or matches?
Yeah, so similar to how we plan training, we always have a strategy to planning games. If we have three games in 5 days, then it's important that we do this. Players can't cope with the physical demands of playing three games in 5 days. Therefore, it's important that we manage player minutes to maximise performance in games. If this can be done by giving player a half a game so he's right for the next game and so on. So we try and have a football decision based on substitutes, but we also have physical decisions as well. For example, a player could be going through maturation, so he cannot tolerate the load, but he's an important player to us. So we might need him to play in every game, but to manage his load and manage his fatigue, we'll manage his minutes in this sense.
One thing that we covered during the pre-camp session is that about 2 weeks prior to the actual tournament, the squad is announced and then you go out and reach to your club counterparts. So obviously there's a lot of club communication going on because the U17 players are coming from different clubs. Now that you've finished the entire camp, obviously I'm sure the clubs are interested to know how their players are doing from a physical standpoint. So what type of communication do you have with them post-camp?
Yeah, so like we do, like you've mentioned, pre-camp, we request information. What we do is we collate all the information on what the player's done on camp and send this back to the club within a short period, within 24 hours normally. The type of stuff we send back to them is the player schedule. So where they trained, when they recovered, where they completed the gym-based session on their individual program. But we also send back all the training load from the GPS data. So this gets graphed and reported back to the club. We also give them details about what they've done in the strength and conditioning session, with the duration and the intensity of that session also. Like I mentioned, we do wellness every morning, so this information is also put on the report to show how they reported every morning. So that's what we do. We send back the information to the clubs for them to use in a similar way we use the information. So when a player comes back, they can plan their next session or plan their training load for the week. Some may give some players a bit of time off because they've had some load whilst they've been on camp.
Absolutely fantastic overview, I think, of what goes into a camp and all the intricacies of it. One of the questions I have for you, David, is because you've been doing this for a while, what are the challenges of being a physical preparation coach in international football?
There's a lot of challenges, James. In international football, I'd say that one of the main challenges in international football is the schedule of events and some tournaments. These tournaments consist of a lot of games in a short space of time. For example, three games in 5 days, which is one day rest between games. So the physical demands of this for the young players is very high, especially if not used to this amount of load during their club program. Therefore, we have to be strategic on what we do. And as mentioned earlier, with our leading and training session and during the games, we have to plan in good detail. Ideally, we want our players to be able to cope with the demands of tournament football, but that's not all the case because of what they're currently used to. Some players will be able to tolerate that load, some players won't. So as I mentioned earlier, we have to plan individually. Another major challenge of working in international football is that you're not always blessed with a high performance facility like clubs have. We have St. George's Park, which is excellent facility and one of the best in the country for high performance sports, not only in football. But as we are always travelling to different locations, you may be put in a hotel that the tournament or the events has put you in to work from, and it may not be the best. So one of the challenges is trying to be creative in what we do when we travel to these types of places. For example, you may not have a pool for regeneration sessions. You may not have a gym suitable enough to carry out the individual club programs. So we can always plan in detail, but also we have to be adaptable on how we deliver on certain sessions.
I know prior to the podcast, we were talking a little bit about the changes that England is trying to do in order to keep up with the world leaders in international football, both from a technical and sports science level. And I'm sure that listeners are going to be really interested in hearing a little bit about what the FA is doing in order to keep up with the world leaders. So can you just give us a little bit of information about that?
Yeah. So I think, like I mentioned earlier, currently internationally, I think we're quite one of the leaders in terms of in what we do. I don't know where many other countries who do the type of pre-camp planning and the pre-camp communication with the players' clubs. So and the post-camp work and the communication that goes on there. We're obviously always looking to improve. And I think with the new facilities at St. George's, we're now starting to get a structure in place where we staff it properly. We're basically planning an England DNA where this kind of outlines how we're going to work and what's our philosophy through the four corner model. So whether that's technical, tactical, physical, or psychological, how we coach through that four corner model, how we support the teams, how we coordinate, what hotels we stay in, how we plan. So we're all trying to get on the same page. So we're all working towards one goal, and that is to win the 2022 World Cup. That's the main goal. So that's currently going on at the minute.
That sounds really great. And so as part of that, the St. George's facility was that push in order to improve the facilities kind of at the home of football?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a big push. We needed a place in the country that was centrally that could, where all the players could, when they meet up for tournaments, could train and use the excellent facilities. Because we didn't quite have this beforehand. We were basically, you know, using hotels around the country with a pitch on site, which wasn't good enough. But now, when it's international week, all the squads can meet up, players can interact between age groups, training pitches on site, gym on site, and excellent facilities. So yeah, it was a big push towards that main goal.
David, the way I like to end up every single podcast episode is for the guest to provide some recommendations for young coaches that are coming up. In this particular case, like a physical, someone who wants to be a physical performance coach, someone who wants to be a sports scientist, you know, what advice would you have for them?
My advice would be, obviously, you've got to start off somewhere and go and do your degree. But whilst you're doing that, go and get some coaching experience. When I was doing my degree, my first year of university, I was coaching in schools, football coaching. It just all adds to the experience and makes you better. It doesn't always have to be strength conditioning, coaching, performance coaching. Go and coach different sports and have a go at it. also, I'd say is get that applied experience as well. And internships are great for this, because I'm not going to go on about how tough football is, but go and experience working in a club and see if you actually like it, because it can be quite a tough environment to work in. There's a lot of different personalities in there, so you've got to basically fit in and feel and get a feel for that before you can start applying your work and what you do. It's a building relationships is key for you to apply your knowledge and your skill set. Because if you don't get, as we know, if you don't get on with coaches, and it won't work out. Because they have the final say. They have the final say most of the time. I don't know if you've experienced that yourself, but yeah.
I was going to say, you're going to have a very short career if you don't get along with coaches.
Well, you can't go in there thinking you know it all, really. You need to go in there and try and build a relationship before you can start implementing some of the stuff that you want to do to enhance performance. Because you won't always get coaches that will be experienced in that. But they'll want to make all the decisions themselves. Another thing is as well is try and build a philosophy on how you want to work. I made that mistake going into Bury, having a philosophy which couldn't work in a League Two club, because there was no structure in place, there was no funding in place. So from going from Everton to Bury, you couldn't use that philosophy because the gym wasn't big enough. So like I say, have a philosophy that works for what you're going into. But like I've mentioned earlier, you've got to be adaptable as well. So yeah, they're my three main tips really. So coaching experience, applied experience in clubs, and generally building your philosophy ready for you to jump in and do the job.
I really liked how you mentioned that you should definitely get internship experience so you can actually see if you would like that career path, because I think sometimes when you're in university, you're like, oh, this is going to be so awesome. I'm going to be working with professional football players at a premiership or championship level club. And when you're actually there, the reality hits you sometimes pretty hard.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I totally agree with you with that. I was lucky enough to go into my boyhood club, which was Everton. But after doing an internship there for 2 and a bit years, it changes your opinion. Because you're working in the sport. It's not all, gloomed up to be. You've got to put the hours in. It's hard work. So, I totally agree with you on that point.
If anyone has any questions or comments regarding the podcast, what's the best way that they can contact you?
Well, the best way would be through Twitter. I think Twitter's really grown within our industry. There's all the practitioners around the world are on there now, tweeting about CPD, about events. Just get me through Twitter, really.
And I'll link your Twitter when I post the podcast on my website.
Okay, great. That's good stuff. Anyone's welcome to contact me if they have any questions. Just feel free to contact me.
David, really glad that we finally got to do this. Appreciate you coming on, taking the time out of your really busy schedule.
No problem at all. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in today. If you enjoy the podcast, please make sure to leave a review and rating in iTunes. It only takes a minute, and it really helps others discover the show. I'll see you guys next week, where I'm going to be publishing 2 episodes. The first episode is going to be Simone Ripamonti, who's a former fitness coach with Real Madrid, Sampdoria, and Melbourne City. And the second episode of the week is going to be Renelle Hobson of ASA, and she's going to be talking about speed development and agility for team sports. I really hope that you guys enjoy those 2 episodes next week, and I'll see you then.